We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Bearer of Weird News. My name is Matt Harvey and I am running for the hotly contested seat of the lounge room. My platform mostly consists of keeping the seat of lounge room warm and bringing in new investments like blankets in the winter and light blankets in the autumn and the spring. Now, my opponents do like to imply that I am a one-issue candidate and have nothing else to say, but to them, I rebut. On a range of issues, I have excellent blanket coverage. Now, before we get into the episode, I'd just like to thank those of you who managed to find time to come out to see my comedy festival and Adelaide Fringe shows, both of the same show, Wage Against the Machine. It's an incredible run. I've been receiving such amazing feedback and so many wonderful people who want to share their own horrible work stories with me, people from unions who feel like they want to come and check it out and tell me all about their time in strikes, and the critical feedback has been wonderful, so it will be running again, definitely be running again at some point. I'll have to figure out exactly what kind of festival to put it in and when I'll be doing that. So keep an ear out, keep an eye out. I will be coming again to a festival near you and hopefully touring it a bit more next year. I will be heading to Edinburgh later this year. The venue is still being sorted out, but other than that, we are all ready to roll. I'll be part of the Free Fringe. So if you are in Edinburgh, if you know anybody who's going to Edinburgh this year, get them to come and see me. I'm doing my previous show, the one that you're no doubt, if you're a long-term listener, sick of hearing about, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, which is a storytelling show, so a nice, simple one, just storytelling, travel stories, and stupid things that have happened to me out and about. So if you're looking for a nice, fun show to return to comedy with and to ease back into the comedy world, I think this is a good one for you. But until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. First, let's start with headlines. The Victorian government has been accused of a cash grab over changes to Oz Lotto. Wait, you're telling me that a lottery is being unfair? I never heard such a thing, and I won't stand for such allegations. What's next? A company deliberately undermining a union? I won't hear it. A 19-year-old at the University of Liverpool recently revealed how a high school dare led him to losing both his nipples. Unilever is seeking him out for a contract to appear in one of their weird Links Will Get You a Horde of Mindless Women ads, as he is halfway to emulating real-life lady killer and recently single playboy, Ken. The deal is close to being signed. The team just needs to commit to one more major change. Good luck to you, little fella. About 300,000 volunteers have signed up to a group on the normally right-wing and very Nazi-inclined chat app, Telegram, calling themselves the IT Army of Ukraine. They are being assigned tasks designed to take the fight to Vladimir Putin. In attempts to level the playing field between one of the world's superpowers and Ukraine as it faces invasion. Presumably, the measures will be continued to be implemented when America decides on which of their brown countries it wants to unjustly make an example of next. And I am very much looking forward to the demystifying of information in the Israel and Palestinian conflict. What's that? We won't be doing that. Why would we? It's not like Palestine is facing a massive army that outweighs them in all aspects or anything like that. No, it's perfectly reasonable and normal civil war. Waving a Nazi flag or displaying memorabilia bearing swastikas will be criminalised in New South Wales, with the state government preparing laws to ban the symbol. As a result, Sky News After Dark anchors have asked Rupert Murdoch to just buy Tasmania and declare it an independent nation of Propagandistan. In the event that Uncle Rupert doesn't come through, though, they are preparing to invest in dog whistles instead. Will Smith has gotten banned from the Oscars for 10 years over slapping Chris Rock. Employees the world over are in talks about how they can simultaneously slap each other so that they too can be banned from boring work-related engagements while still having the earning potential for millions of dollars. I really look forward to seeing what they come up with. Australian academics are calling for the voting age to be lowered from 18 to 16 years of age, as the push for young people to have a say about issues like climate change gains momentum around the world. You can tell that Gen Z is the most optimistic generation yet, as they assume society will survive long enough that Gen Alpha will get a proper vote that can actually make a difference. At least we know that the post-climate change apocalypse will have a fairer system of representation than the world that we live in now. So really, that's something to look forward to. United Australia Party leader Craig Kelly was egged in a Melbourne park during a public appearance. A spokesperson for Kelly condemned the egging, saying, "It's disappointing somebody would assault somebody expressing ideas." However, a spokesperson for the Rest of Humanity has said, "It's disappointing that somebody would express the same ideas that Craig Kelly is spewing out." Gold Coast Mayor Tom Tate's spiritual advisor, Sue Baines, told a religious service in November that a demonic stronghold had been established at the Home of the Arts and that a spiritual battle had begun. Now, I'm not agreeing that there is a demon stronghold anywhere on earth, or that the church should have the power and influence over a member of the council. But if there was going to be a demonic stronghold on earth, then the Gold Coast is a strong contender for where you'd put it. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm suggesting. Prime Minister and noted coal enthusiast Scott Morrison has announced the Australian federal election will be May 21st. Scott Morrison says the election will be a choice between a government you know and a Labor opposition that you don't, demonstrating that he has effectively understood the point of an election, the first step to becoming an effective Prime Minister, and maybe the first sign of a positive change from the notorious liar and self-serving man of the people. Assuming the people are him, of course, that is, all the more keen to serve them. Going on to note that people are tired of politics, which makes calling an election the ultimate evidence that Scott Morrison doesn't understand the people, as even though it is legally required, and he waited until literally the last moment, people who are tired of politics don't want another election. He probably should have considered changing the rules like he did when he first came into power, so it was harder for him to be kicked out. By making it harder again, by just making it not possible to vote him out, saving all of us the hassle of dealing with politics again. Truly demonstrating that he does not understand the Australian people at all. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called Australia a holdout after Scott Morrison refused to strengthen the nation's 2030 emissions reduction target, going on to call coal a stupid investment that would lead to billions in stranded assets. Morrison responded by asking, "Well, if it's so stupid, then why does Santa give it to him as a gift every year? Is he saying that Santa is stupid? When word got to Santa Claus about the feelings of reliance on coal as a means of keeping business running, you better believe he started throwing a tantrum about how you can't do anything anymore, and that he'd been using coal for thousands of years without fault, and now all of a sudden he needs to change everything. And how back in the day, he was a hero.
for giving Rudolph a job where nobody else would, and using some language to describe him that really should be as dead as the coal that he hands out. Frankly, it was a disgraceful display from the children's entertainer and beloved Batman. Applications for money from an online flood support fundraiser by Federal Defence Minister Peter Dutton are being directed through a password-protected section of his Liberal National Party-branded website, alongside links to other official government programs. Dutton, who holds the seat of Dixon in Brisbane's north, also named a small community group with close links to him as the beneficiary of the $28,962 raised for his electorate, despite it not being listed with the National Charities Register. This is because they had close connections to Dutton, who had been reclassified as a national disaster. So anywhere he goes or has a connection to will actually be eligible to receive disaster funding. It's a nice little loophole. Zurich Insurance has removed its Z symbol after the letter has been shown to show support for the Ukraine war. I have, however, noticed that zebras refuse to even acknowledge their rampant use of the letter Z. They say the use of the letter Z simply isn't black and white. Formerly obscure Liberal candidate thrust into the spotlight for being aggressively ignorant, Catherine Debs, ignited controversy over a number of now-deleted comments she had made where she called trans people surgically mutilated and sterilized, and likened her lobbying to stop transgender athletes from competing in women's sport to standing up against the Nazis during the Holocaust. Oh, really? This should be good. Go on. We're all listening, said all reasonable people. We just love to hear what you have to say. She also explained that she is not transphobic and that her comments relate to the rights of women and girls who have a dedicated female sports category for fair competition. Presumably, as she feels, women can't compete with men, she has also offered to take a gender wage gap hit and reduce her own wage to accurately represent how little she can do compared to the boys. Scott Morrison was not able to correctly state the job seeker payment on day 8 of the federal election campaign. Morrison said, "Oh, I misspoke," when it was pointed out that his statement about the job seeker rate being $46 a week was incorrect. It is in fact $46 a day. Morrison misspoke because he was stating more of an aspirational value for the major support system with an eye to heading it towards $0 a week. So really, it's just a sneak peek more than a misspeaking. Speak your truth, Morrison. Wouldn't hurt to do it for once in your career. It'd be a nice change. Switch things up a little. Speaking of Scott Morrison, he has named current Women's Safety Minister, Anne Rustin, as the new Health Minister if the coalition government is re-elected. Thrilled by her new appointment, Rustin set about figuring out how to maximise the amount she earns for the minimal amount of work by going back in time to 2014 and delivering this message. Everybody would like to think that we could go on in life with universal healthcare and with universal education and with all these wonderful things that over the last 20 years Australians have come to accept as a given. Unfortunately, the credit card is maxed out. Morrison used this as the newest step in his attempt to not get re-elected at all, but neither quit the job, saying, "Man, if this doesn't stop them from voting for me, I fear nothing will." Moving on to our biggest stories now. First up, it is Olympic news. The Olympics, the only opportunity to become bankrupt as city will outbid another city for, is coming to Brisbane for 2032. And in preparation for the upcoming event, debate has begun on what animal should be used for the mascot. Carmen Costello, who sits on the Queensland Tourism Industry Council and the state's Koala Advisory Council, believed the koala was the clear front runner due to its recent endangered status. But unless we have a koala who is currently on fire and call it something like Starvey, the soon-to-be-dead koala, having them as the Olympic mascot will likely result in the message being lost in an avalanche of cute merchandise. Like the panda being used for the Wildlife Foundation mascot, and it still hasn't helped the situation. Maybe because, like real pandas, they just have little to no interest in preserving their own species by refusing to fuck. Also, we did the koala in 2018 for the Commonwealth Games, and sure, nobody really actually pays attention to the Commonwealth Games, so it becomes a philosophical conundrum. If the mascot is used in the Commonwealth Games, did it actually even happen? And what even are the Commonwealth Games? And isn't it cute that the Commonwealth still thinks it's relevant? If we want something that is specific to Queensland and will raise awareness of a struggling, uniquely Australian problem, our mascot should be one of the following options. A piece of coral, made with those sequins that you can sort of wipe to reveal a new picture underneath. One side will be a beautiful and colourful coral reef. The other will be a bleached white coral reef, so that the mascot will be able to better reflect your belief of the state of the barrier reef. Just wipe on or wipe off. A Voltron of actual pieces of coal dug up from the Queensland Adani mine. Or a cuddly plush of Bianca Reinhardt, daughter of mining magnate and Santa's little helper who managed to land the lucrative naughty child coal contract, Gina Reinhardt. Look, just be happy that it isn't held in Perth, otherwise it'd actually be a plushie of Gina herself. However, Queensland Minister for Tourism, Innovation and Sport, and man who keeps tight-lipped in a conflict of interest, even when he isn't supposed to, Stirling Hinchcliffe, offered up another possibility. The ibis, more affectionately known as the bin chicken. Given Hinchcliffe's history for resigning over a controversy and finding his way back into the cabinet, the appeal of the bin-adjacent animal actually makes a lot of sense. After all, he keeps getting rescued from the proverbial bin. Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk said it was highly unlikely that the ibis would be the 2032 Games mascot because she's a coward, but also said, "We'll let the public decide." Now, let me just put this out there, Anastasia. Letting the public decide has led to some controversial picks in the past and opens up a number of potentially fun but ultimately disappointing mascots, like Mascot McMascotface or Scott Morrison. Yeah, the public chose him. If we are attempting to use the mascot to say something about Queensland and its recent troubles, like Cameron Costello wants us to, well, there seems to be only one realistic option. After a severe increase in pests following Queensland's flood disaster, there was a rise in snake and rat callouts. So, we here at the Bearer of Weird News have two last suggestions for the newest Olympic mascot. We've got Wiggles, the deadly venomous snake without a home, and Harold, the waterlogged rat, who, you may have figured out, was inspired by not only the increased callouts for rats, but Harold Holt, everyone's favourite PM. So don't be surprised if Harold disappears partway through the Olympics. But we will have a story to tell for years to come, and who knows, maybe we'll even name a swimming pool after him. Yes, that's what we did, we named a swimming pool after him. The Harold Holt Swimming Centre. Free market capitalism news now. Two businesses are required to go to court by the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, otherwise known as ASIC, for allegedly charging Aussies on Centrelink or low incomes more for household products. allegedly is a word news outlets use that means we can't directly say that they did it, but we're damn certain that they did it, and have written every sentence to be read almost as if the word allegedly wasn't there. Allegedly. ASIC is suing companies Rent for Keeps and Laneway Depot for alleged breaches of various consumer protections under the Credit Act and generally being jerks. This means that Rent for Keeps and Laneway Depot customers, who are often on low incomes or settling benefits, were paying significantly more for electronics and white goods than they lawfully should have. It is alleged that one consumer used Centrelink payments to pay almost $2,500 for a fridge, which was retailed at $365, or 427 avocado and toasts by the new economic system. Another paid $1,200 for a mobile phone, which retailed for just $249, which is a mere 190.2 avocado and toasts if we're using the new system. The amounts charged by both Rent for Keeps and Layaway Depot exceeded the 48% annual cost rate cap that applies to credit contacts under the Credit Act. Can I just say, 48% is actually an outrageous amount, especially for people who are on welfare. We should, if anything, the crime should be that it is 48%. We should really be looking into that. But I will say this, it is a smart play, because really, people on welfare are often too busy worrying that they won't have enough money to pay rent, or eat food, or raise the children that they may have, to even notice that they're being taken advantage of. And it's not like they can afford to take legal action against you if something goes wrong. And they do notice that you're taking advantage of them. Really, if you think about it, it's the perfect crime. And if 63% of Australian newspapers are to be believed, they are all just bludgers who don't want to work and just want to take the government money without any kind of work or effort. Unlike the newspapers, who understand that in order to earn government money, you need to do something for them in exchange, like brainwash a country into voting against their interests. It's a simple back and forth, really. Come on, guys, get on board. So really, if these welfare recipients don't want to be taken advantage of by companies like Rent for Keeps and Layaway Depot, they need to do something for them first. The simplest solution is to get them to do their work for the dole for these companies and give them unpaid labour, which they can offset the extra amount that they'd be charging these people simply for being poor. But we can do better than that, can't we? Oh, yes, we can. We need to get these welfare recipients under the Work for the Dole scheme, of course. We aren't expecting businesses to pay poor people, no. That'd be ridiculous. And we get them, right? We get them to form a militia, ground forces, you know, to go to war against the other retail companies who would make these companies look bad by not fully utilizing this unpaid army, either through overcharging them or on the sly in an illegal way, or by using them to maintain market supremacy by destroying their competitors in a spectacular third act battle that would rival the return of the king. You just need to let the free markets decide, you know how it is, just the old free market decision, that's simple. Moving on now to surprising news. Amazon, the real world avatar for every dystopian corporation fused into a Voltron of exploitation, has been in the news for a surprisingly good reason. Good being a relative term that, well, when all you hear from one place is despair, a thing not being a complete catastrophe feels like good news, you know? Amazon workers have successfully formed their first union. That's right. The group is led by a former Amazon worker, Chris Smalls, who made his name protesting against safety conditions at the retail giant during the pandemic and was fired from his job at the Amazon warehouse on Staten Island the same day. Workers at a New York warehouse voted 55% in favor of joining the Amazon Labor Union, a union representing some 8,300 workers who work at the same warehouse. In a statement, Amazon said that it was disappointed by the loss in New York and that it was evaluating how to proceed. Some suggestions put forward have been activating the Amazon drone's seek and destroy capacity and eviscerating the proletariat. Amazon has also accused regulators of improperly influencing the vote, saying they'd unfairly given Amazon employees correct and accurate information and genuinely attempted to improve their lives. An Amazon spokesperson said, "How are we supposed to compete with that? We are used to working in a world where money just buys whatever we want. Influence, people willing to lie for us, unflinching loyalty from powerful figures. But we've never had to deal with someone telling the actual truth." Outrageous. Unsurprisingly, Amazon has already started pouring resources into fighting the unionizing efforts, which it sees as an obstacle to business flexibility and warehouse efficiency. They're right, though. Few things make you more flexible than a group of people standing behind you and whipping you until you not only squeeze work into the tiniest spaces of your open calendar, but also do it in increasingly quicker intervals. That's just business, people. There are many plans in the works to get back at employees. First is a crafty one. Amazon announced its first loss since 2015 as sales slowed, costs rose, and its investment in electric vehicle company Rivian was supposedly the cause of wiping out profits. Profits that, despite Bezos being Scrooge McDuck's money bin rich, apparently never existed before, as they always hid their money in space. You might not know this, but Jeff Bezos has for years been sending bags of money into space to hide them on the moon, which is why he is so desperate to get to the moon. All his extra money is there, and he can run an elaborate tax haven from said moon. Posting losses, however, caused the cost of Amazon stock to drop 10%, impacting the wealth of many rich and angry people who will no doubt see this as a personal attack and insist on swift retribution. Poor people have their form of unions, you know, like a group of people who form together to protect human rights in the workplace, but rich people have their own form of union, which is institutions and police forces that form a vanguard against the unwashed masses when they attempt to revolt. Same, same. Now, I'm not saying that Amazon has questionable business practices, but when you wait until a month after your first successful union to announce a loss of money directly impacting your shareholders' back pay, back pockets, to piss them off, well, maybe you need to rethink a few of the things and an outside perspective wouldn't go astray. In a perfectly proportionate and reasonable response to a union, Amazon has discussed plans to block the word union and other related keywords from an internal messaging app that the company is currently developing for workers. Forcing workers to get clever with messaging by not doing it on the app and doing what a union does best, communicating with people. I believe Amazon bosses will be quite surprised by how much their employees love getting together to discuss onions. The list of banned words is said to include union, fire, which, you know, sorry, if there's a fire in the building anywhere, you won't be able to say the word, compensation, plantation, slave labor, diversity, robots, grievance, and injustice, among others. The list is incomplete and will be added to in time. First on the list of words possibly to be added will be toilet break, wage, and off-the-books moon base for troubled employees. You know that you're definitely on the right side of history and will be looked on favorably by future generations when you're making preparations to ban the ability to speak not only of injustice, but diversity and slave labor. See? That will fix things. Ta-da! There obviously can't be any more issues at Amazon warehouses, as now they have a union and this fancy new app on the way. There is no more injustice, so obviously the workers won't ever need to speak about injustice again. That's why, obviously that's why they're blocking the work. They won't need to speak to each other, they won't need to speak to the media, not to the hardworking slave drivers. Oh, sorry, I mean bosses.
Bosses, that's the word I was looking for.
A spokesperson for Amazon said, no, you've solved the problem. This is now an injustice-free zone, so shut the fuck up already. Cybercrime news now. Australia's Department of Home Affairs, alongside the Australian Federal Police, have today launched a new cybercrime centre as part of their national plan to combat cybercrime. The $89 million centre will be specifically tasked with preventing cybercriminals from scamming, stealing, and defrauding Australians, risking there being no money left for ordinary Australians to do ordinary Australian things like donate to governments that fund the AFP and the Department of Home Affairs with massive amounts of unchecked power and funding. The movement of monies from pockets of Australians to scammers is seen as a real problem among key figures, counter to the national plan of stripping the country of all profitability and making off for more Hawaiian pastures when the country is converted into a permanent coal and gas power factory that harnesses the never-ending flame of a country that burns all year round. We have gotten off to a good start with fires raging from June to roughly around the end of summer in 2019. But it's still a long way away from the final goal of power-giving fire 365 days a year across the entire country. Oh, what a dream. Oh, what a beautiful dream. It's the logical end to the sustainability argument that strikes a balance between renewable energy and fossil fuel industries. Come on, think about it, people. Australian Home Affairs Minister Karen Andrews said the pandemic has highlighted the need to crack down on cybercrime, which she said is one of the fastest growing and most prolific types of crime in the country, followed by a close second of the newest crime going unpunished, plague racketeering by JobKeeper collecting businesses. But that will never be cracked down on, so it is better to put up a show of force by developing a police force whose powers can later be turned on the citizenry when they prove to be too much of a hassle / try to ask politicians questions. Useful. The national plan also aims to establish a cybercrime forum that brings together representatives of state and federal governments and regulators such as the Office of E-Safety Commissioner to develop a national cybercrime action plan. The first classes at the forum will include E-prefixes, a defunct way of describing internet-based services and titles. How many people will use your website? A beginner's guide to knowing the population size. Do people want fast internet? An investigation. And investigating in a new development. One proper payment or years of failed attempts overblowing the budget. A beginner's guide. Australia does think highly of itself in the digital service industry, even before we successfully created a clearly fake app called Anom. Even before offering Ukraine cybersecurity assistance, before doing something helpful like sanctions or asking them what they want. And we are happy to brush over the fact that 15,000 major news and government websites were affected by an attempt to change domains from .com.au to .au. Though when it was confirmed that a large chunk of these were News Corp websites, everyone decided collectively, as a country, that it was for the good of the population that we didn't tell anyone about it for as long as possible. Moving on to About Fucking Time news. Jackie Lambie, the bloody fucking worker man's darling's strange best friend, has been able to reveal a secret deal that she struck with Scott Morrison to release refugees from Infinity Prison. I mean, unlawful detention. The Tasmanian senator, for years, refused to detail what her deal was with the Prime Minister after she voted to remove Medivac legislation, which was passed by independents in the last sitting week of 2018, against the government's will. Now, this seems like a superfluous detail to include, given it's something potentially positive for people who we have caused civil war and general unrest in many of the regions that they come from, and then refuse to help them when they attempt to flee, often citing, well, lots of things happen in this country we don't like. For example, basic human rights being kind of meant for refugees. But we don't flee halfway across the world seeking refuge. No, we stay here and we deal with our shit. The announcement applies to refugees in an Australian offshore detention facility on Nauru, as well as those currently housed in temporary regional processing centres. I do find the use of the word temporary very ironic in this particular instance, as while they have been released, if I told you I had a temporary axe in my forehead for an undisclosed number of years before I'd been medevaced to a hospital, you'd probably think that I had something wrong with me, besides the axe in my head, of course. Lambie said she kept the deal secret, and the Prime Minister kept the details of the agreement in a safe in Parliament House. She said it included a private agreement from Morrison to accept the New Zealand offer, and said, I couldn't tell the story of what had happened, because otherwise, the deal's off. That means people would have been still stuck there. So instead, they got to languish in an unknowing fate for a few more half a decade while waiting on a man who claims he was put in his job by God and strictly adheres to the guiding principles of Jesus, that the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim the best form of welfare is a job. Yeah, just like Jesus would have said. Amnesty International said there was 112 refugees on Nauru and another 1,168 in Australia who would be eligible for resettlement under the deal. However, it does not cover those who were engaged in other third country resettlement pathways, such as with the US, or those left in Papua New Guinea after Australia ended its offshore processing agreements there. So what? We just bailed on people in Papua New Guinea after taking them prisoner under dubious circumstances and shipped them to an offshore tropical island to languish for an unknown period of time. Looks like we've finally achieved full UK status and may be considered for joining the actual United Kingdom. Congratulations, Australia, we did it. The coalition government has delayed the deal as they repeatedly argue that the deal could encourage asylum seekers to travel by boat to Australia, saying they were concerned that resettled refugees could claim New Zealand citizenship and then return to Australia, as New Zealand citizens are usually eligible for a special category visa to visit, study, stay, and work in Australia indefinitely. Rather than thinking that maybe, just maybe, as there are clearly has been a stronger show of support from New Zealand, and honestly, there is nothing that special about Australia, and nobody is fleeing their home country specifically to come to Australia. They haven't been swayed by Morrison's infamous tourism campaign, where the bloody hell are you? Causing the now PM to be unable to sleep due to the power of his influential words and mysterious departure under suspicious circumstances. Have I solved this? Is this why Morrison had to leave Tourism Australia? He created a tourism campaign so powerful that it convinced all people smugglers to turn their boats hard to the south and to make a beeline for the mostly empty shores of Australia. Well, no wonder he has worked so hard to make us seem like a cold, uncaring, and cruel country which doesn't even allow small children to seek medical advice or see a doctor without massive public harrowing. It's a slogan so powerful, he took it to heart and decided to up and disappear during most natural disasters, causing us to ask the question, where the bloody hell are you? Finally, eternal spiraling nonsense news. Australian Prime Minister and Coal Salesman of the Month, Scott Morrison, has suggested Australians looking for rent relief in the wake of rising rental prices after the COVID impacts on the economy kept things reasonable and livable for more people should instead look to buying a home despite struggling with rising rental prices. Yeah, that's a thing that he said. That's a very true thing that he said. Really doubling down on those contradictory phrases that we have come to know from Morrison, like, if you have a go, you get a go, and the best form of welfare is a job. In this instance, he's running the idea that the best form of rental relief is home ownership. Despite the seemingly obvious contradiction that, for renters, affordability declined over the past year, with the proportion of income required to meet rent payments increasing by 0.4% to 23.7%. I mean, it's a simple principle. If you're struggling to understand how it makes economic sense, let me give you some examples of similar circumstances. So, let's see what we got here. If you can't afford a steak, easy, just buy a cow. You'll get heaps of steak, some milk for a little while at least, and it'll save you money on mowing the lawn as the cow will just eat up all of the grass until it's steak day, baby. And if you can't afford petrol, no problem. Just buy an oil refinery. You'll get all the petrol that you need. Just shave a little off the top for yourself. All across Australia, weekly rent prices for houses have surged. Perth is up 14.6%, Brisbane is up 5.2%, and Melbourne is up 0.9%. Prices for units, which, if we're to follow the PM's advice, we should be buying, also increased in all capital cities. Sydney and Melbourne aside, as the loss of international students and migrant workers hit the CBD hard, because, you know, we couldn't exploit cheap labour and we were forced to compensate humans semi-properly for once. It's a whole hassle. Weekly rental prices for units jumped 11.7% in Perth and 1.1% in Brisbane. But in the world's formerly most livable city, Melbourne, they actually dropped by 8.2%. But this was only because Melbourne, when other cities left lockdown, we decided that we'd do a different thing. And we stayed in our houses longer and decided to cry and break down and then keep breaking the rules and then complaining when they kept getting extended due to people not following the rules. It was a whole thing. It was a fun little cat and mouse game that we were playing. In one generation, the cost of a home has gone up 3 times if you're on the average weekly earnings. And according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, the average Australian house price in September 2019 was $638,900. So the 20% deposit required for a loan would be a lazy $127,780. Very simple, very achievable, not a problem at all. Or only 3 to 5 years of part-time earnings if workers give up pesky things like eating food, regular bathing, and living in a house. I mean, it just feels like a very achievable goal, guys. It's the small indulgences that you need to give up first when you're trying to break into the housing market. We all know it. Avocado toast, your extra coffee, and you're living in a house. Simple. It is, after all, a burden for everyone to share. Oh. What's that? That isn't a statement regarding solidarity for rental relief for the average people? No? Oh, no. Well, then who gets this kindly show of kindness? He asked, knowingly, to a finger that wasn't telling him anything. Oh, I see. Looky here, Scott Morrison has announced new rental waivers and deferrals for commercial tenants hit by the impact of the coronavirus crisis. Of course. Going so far as to make it a legal requirement that landlords speak with tenants about rental arrangements, and if they refused, they would forfeit their way out of the lease. And for larger commercial landlords, Morrison is calling on banks to provide support, which, if I'm honest, isn't too much of a leap for banks, as they are always giving to the poor and the struggling, you know, always offering up a chance and working towards generally improving not only the community, but slowly building a better world
So really, that was a no-brainer. That was okay. He barely gets credit for that. Morrison said measures to help residential tenants and their landlords with rent would be dealt with by the newest model for providing support for small people, workers, and renters, leaning on the state and territory governments to actually do the things that we need, leaving the hands of the federal government clean for the current election cycle so that they cannot be blamed for any major fuck-ups. But he isn't a monster, guys. He gets it. He knows. He's cool. He's hip to the jive. He understands. Having been a multiple homeowner himself, he checked with Jenny that he should probably empathise and says, yeah, it was hard to buy his first home. And his second home, in 1995, a two-bedroom California bungalow on Bronte's Luger Bray Avenue, which they bought for $330,000 when Morrison was 27 years old, and then they sold in 2009 for $985,000 when they sold it, and has since then gone on to sell for $1.4 million in 2014, and realestate.com.au now actually estimates it to be worth $2.9 million, though that doesn't include the cost of the exorcism that you'll need to get the image of Scott and Jenny fucking in the room that you now sleep in out of your brain. That's an extra cost that no one's considered. So it kind of feels like maybe the fifth highest paid world leader has disconnected from the struggle of ordinary Australians. It doesn't really understand that it is actually much harder to buy a house now because, you know, not only is the same property is infinitely more valuable, but the value of the dollar is infinitely lower. And that's a lot of that is actually because of his government. Hey, but, you know, who am I to judge? He gets it. He knows that it's tough. And to be honest, by now, he's done most of the jobs that people have done, albeit for a much higher pay rate than the average person will receive for doing the same jobs, but it's just good to see him out there. Man of the people, pretending to be all of the people. And that's the end. Thanks for coming out and listening to a whole nother episode, and stick around to the end to listen to the outro. I'd like to thank those of you who have returned. If you're a new listener, thanks for sticking around. If you like it, please recommend it to a friend, share it, put it wherever you like, share it on your social media, send it to someone you think will enjoy it. If you want to support the show, the two best ways to do that are come and see me live, wherever I am doing a live show, come out and support that. That's probably the best direct way to do it, but also you can go to my Linktree and you can put a donation. Currently, we only have PayPal donations, so I don't understand if you don't want to use PayPal because Elon Musk and all that. I'm working on some other ways that maybe we can do that. If people are interested in doing that and have a better method, let me know, and I'll look into those methods. But thanks for sticking around. Come see me in whatever festival, particularly in Edinburgh, because I know nobody in Edinburgh, and I'd love to have a successful season. It'd be fun to do the storytelling show out that way. And thanks a lot. Look after yourselves. Stay safe. Keep your boosters. Wash your hands. Do all that sort of stuff. And I'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye.